Burnley Summerfield and the Christmas Adventure by Zanna Eve Chown.
Just a quick photo before you start.
Okay, sure. Bernice sucked in her stomach and smiled.
Snap. Perfect, thanks. Now, all I need to do is press this button here and you're off. Have fun.
Crunk. The crisp white snow crumpled underfoot with a satisfying crunch. And Bernice noted approvingly that she was wearing sturdy lace-up boots and a thick fleecy coat. She was standing at the side of a quiet road, flanked with rows of suburban brick houses. Each little front garden was covered in snow, and lights gleamed in the windows and twinkled on the trees. The air smelled spicy and sweet like cinnamon. She bent down to scoop up a handful of snow and was patting it into a ball with her gloved hands when the front door of the nearest house swung open and a warm light shone out.
Benny! Called a friendly voice. Over here!
A woman with long red hair and rosy cheeks was framed in the doorway, holding a steaming mug of something delicious. Her woolen jumper was covered in a pattern of dancing reindeer and snowflakes.
I'm Chrissy, she said. We've been expecting you. Would you like a cup of hot chocolate?
The sound of a Christmas carol being played on the piano gently drifted out from the room behind her.
I would, said Bernice happily.
She dropped her snowball onto the ground, unthrown, and started to make her way up the garden path.
Oh, mind the lobster,
the woman added with a smile. There was a flash of red in the snow, and Bernice sidestepped smartly to avoid the scuttling creature.
There's always one that gets out, isn't there?
Said Chrissy comfortably.
Sometimes I wonder if we should skip the whole lobster chair bowl thing, but you know, tradition.
Oh, yes, agreed Bernice, tradition. Then, wait, what?
Oh, come and see, said the woman. We've got a lovely big one this year.
Bernice sighed and looked up into the snowy sky.
Pause, she said.
The pale sky was replaced by the dark metal of Legion's third best hairdressing salon.
Oh dear,
said Mr. Minchin, hurrying over and flicking a few switches on the side of Bernice's pod.
Well, that didn't take long. What happened?
There was a lobster, said Bernice. The thin man frowned.
But one or two always escape, he said.
That's just part of the fun.
He pulled a face.
Hang on, you're not one of those animal rights people, are you?
No, 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 said Bernice hurriedly. I mean, actually, yes, I probably am, but it's not worth getting into that for the sake of a computer-simulated lobster. The man visibly relaxed. From the shop above them, Bernice could hear the whine of hair clippers.
Was this really the best place you could find for all this? She asked.
The man shrugged.
My brother owns the building.
On the wall beside him, an advertising screen showed a family opening their Christmas stockings by a roaring fire. Bernice recognised the mother as the woman she had just met.
Spend Christmas on 20th century Earth, it read.
Bernice imagined her name at the bottom of the screen, accompanied by a short line to explain her credentials. Simulation developed in association with Professor Summerfield, specialist in 20th century history.
Yes, that had a nice ring to it.
It had been a while, more than a while, since she'd been acknowledged for her academic achievements, and she had to admit that it felt good.
Nothing beats a bit of ancient history, eh? She said, gesturing at the screen. I guess that's why I'm here. And I'm paying you,
Mr. Minchin pointed out.
Yes, said Bernice. Right, so the thing about the lobsters then?
Yes.
What, nowhere in the history of the planet Earth, to my knowledge, has anybody had a traditional lobster chair bowl.
Are you sure?
Mr. Minchin frowned.
I am sure, she said firmly. Honestly, she thought. They've gone to all the trouble of getting in a consultant who specialises in this particular time period. The least they could do is listen to her.
Totally sure, she repeated.
Well,
Mr. Minchin took out a tablet and tapped a few buttons.
That is a surprise.
And a shame.
We all make mistakes,
said Bernice encouragingly.
It's going to really mess up the game section at the end.
Well, better to be accurate.
Right, said the man. Lobsters are gone. Do you want to go back in and start again?
Let's do it. This time, Bernice made it up the snowy path without the threat of crustacean, and Chrissy gave her a welcoming hug.
Oh, we're so glad you made it, Chrissy said. Come inside.
She led Bernice through the carpeted hallway to a large sitting room where an old man was dozing on a comfy-looking sofa.
Grandpa is having a nap right now, but he'll be dressing up as Santa later. Oh, and here's Toby.
The little boy from the poster was hard at work drawing a picture of a snowman, but he looked up and waved. Bernice followed Chrissy into the kitchen, where a teenage girl was cutting rolled-out pastry into the shape of tiny spaceships. She had an adorable puff of flour on the end of her nose.
Hello, she said in a friendly voice. I'm Zarkwell, destroyer of stars.
Pause, said Bernice. She waited for the room to fade away, then turned to the thin man standing outside the pod. Seriously? She asked.
I don't know what you mean, said Mr. Minchin.
Have you written this all from scratch? Bernice asked. Is the code new?
Some of it, he said cautiously. Some of it is reuse from another experience I was working on.
Bernice raised an eyebrow.
It's standard practice, he said defensively. Everyone recycles code.
So I'm guessing the other experience had a Zarkwell the Star Destroyer in it then, said Bernice.
Well, it was a starfighting experience, said the man. You know, fly spaceships, shoot aliens, pew, pew, pew. Why?
Because she's in there making gingerbread, that's why, said Bernice. I assumed that you had a finished product here for me to test. But this feels like it's been slightly rushed.
Rushed?
The man drew himself up to his full height, looking very offended.
How dare you?
Sorry, said Bernice. That was rude of me. She tried to slide the pod door open and found that it was firmly locked.
Does this, open from the inside?
No,
said the man.
Oh,
said Bernice, silently cursing her stupidity. She'd walked into a trap. She should have known it was too good to be true, as if anyone would really want to hire a professor of archaeology on this godforsaken planet.
It unlocks automatically at the end of the experience, Mr. Minchin finished. Or I can unlock it from over here.
He flicked a lever, and the door of Bernice's pod slid open.
Oh,
said Bernice again, flushing slightly.
Just like any ride, Mr. Minchin said sternly. You wouldn't just be able to jump out of a roller coaster whenever you wanted, would you?
No, said Bernice.
You wouldn't stop a ghost train every couple of minutes just to have a bit of a chat about how it could be improved, would you?
Said Bernice, I guess not.
Same thing here.
The man went over to a chest of drawers and pulled out a battered notepad, which he handed over.
How about, he said, you take this and work your way through the whole simulation, jotting down notes as you go. Then we can talk about them all, at the end, in one go.
Well, sure, said Bernice. I mean, if that's what you think is best.
I do, said the man, glancing at the clock on the wall. I very much do. I'll reboot it again, but this time play through to the end, yeah?
He flicked the lever and the pod door slid shut again.
Great, said Bernice brightly. Well, here I go again.
This time, Bernice didn't stop to marvel at the snow or wait for Chrissy to call her. She bounded up the path and knocked on the red front door. It swung open and the red-haired woman appeared.
I'm Chrissy, she said. We've been expecting you. Would you like a cup of hot chocolate?
I'd rather have an eggnog, said Bernice, stepping into the warmth.
No problem, said Chrissy. We're so glad you made it. come inside.
The come inside was a little redundant, Bernice thought, seeing as she was already in the house, but she decided to let it slip. After all, she was being paid to look for historical inaccuracies, wasn't she? Not minor inconsistencies in the script. She flung herself down on the sofa next to Grandpa and smiled at little Toby. Hi, Zarkwell, she called in the direction of the kitchen.
Oh, that's Zoe in there, said Chrissy. She's making gingerbread.
Zoe, said Bernice with a theatrical wink. Got it. Chrissy bustled away, then came back again with a glass of eggnog and a plate of mince pies.
Go on, she said. It's Christmas Day.
Bernice took a mince pie. It was delicious, warm and spicy with a dab of clotted cream on top.
Oh, this really is very good, she said, with her mouth full.
Thank you,
dimpled Chrissy. Oh, I meant the simulation, said Bernice. Sorry, the mince pie is good too.
Thank you, dimpled Chrissy.
Bernice felt a little hand tap her on her knee. It was Toby.
Is it time to open the presents yet?
He lisped adorably. I don't know, said Bernice.
Not until after lunch, said Chrissy, wagging a finger at the little boy and disappearing into the kitchen.
Bernice's mouth watered. Despite knowing that she wasn't really eating a mince pie, it had tasted so real. Now she couldn't wait for the traditional 20th century Christmas meal. Red sauce was in there somewhere, wasn't it? Oh, she should know, after all, this was the stuff that she was being paid for. Although, to be fair, she wasn't entirely sure what bread sauce actually was. Time to do a bit of work, she decided, and stood up to examine the Christmas tree. It was tall and straight, its shiny needles draped in twinkling lights and little ornaments, just as expected, and right at the top, there was a pink plastic baby doll. What's that? She asked.
That's the baby Jesus, said Toby. You know, Santa's little boy.
Said Bernice, making a note on her pad.
It used to be Santa's job to deliver presents on Christmas Eve, said Toby. But one year there was nobody to look after his baby while he did it, so he stuck him on the top of a fir tree, and he died of cold. Everyone was very sad.
He stopped and looked very proud of himself.
That's the true meaning of Christmas.
Thanks, Toby, said Bernice. She wasn't quite sure what to say. Was this a bodged attempt at historical accuracy, or was it meant to be cute and funny, a child's misunderstanding of a story? Perhaps it was time to wake Grandpa. Gently, she went over to the sofa and patted the snoring man on the shoulder. He opened his eyes at once.
Oh, dear. Did I drop off?
He asked, shaking as he laughed. Bernice noted, like a bowl full of jelly.
Oh, have I missed lunch? Is it time for the Queen's speech?
No, no, soothed Bernice. I'm Benny, she added, although it didn't really seem necessary. He was acting as if he had known her all his life.
Would you like a cup of hot chocolate? He asked.
No, thank you. We've done that bit, said Bernice. I just wanted to ask you some questions about Christmas.
Fire away, old girl, said Grandpa, shuffling back in his chair.
That baby on top of the tree, what's that all about?
That baby,
laughed Grandpa.
That baby? That's the baby Jesus, you know, Santa's kid.
Hmm, said Bernice.
Lunch is ready,
called Chrissy from the kitchen.
Everyone sit down and pull a cracker, then we can tuck in.
Bernice and the family linked arms in a circle around the table, each holding the ends of their Christmas crackers. They all pulled at once and laughed as the tiny plastic toys tumbled out. Grandpa placed a purple paper crown on Bernice's head, and Toby read out a joke from a slip of paper.
What do snowmen eat for Christmas? He asked. Frosted flakes.
I don't get it, Bernice said, laughing. But no one seemed to be able to explain it either, so she let it go and turned her attention to the table, which was loaded with food.
Before we eat, said Zoe, let's just take a moment to be thankful.
Everyone solemnly bowed their heads.
We give thanks to the Federated Government of the Star League, she said. We will avenge their deaths and crush the star scum forever. Amen. Amen, echoed Chrissy.
Amen, said Bernice. Pause. The festive surroundings faded away, and she was back in the pod. This time, Mr. Minchin was nowhere to be seen. Bernice frowned. Surely basic health and safety required someone to be present outside the pod at all times. What if she needed the toilet? Perhaps he was in the toilet. She rapped on the glass. Hello? Mr. Minchin? Nothing. She banged harder with her fists. Hello? Mr. Minchin appeared at the top of the stairs. His hair was wet and he was wearing a towel around his neck.
Yes.
Were you having your hair cut? Bernice asked in astonishment.
I thought you were going to complete the experience on your own, he replied peevishly.
Well, yes, I was, said Bernice. But it turns out you didn't fix Farquaad the Destroyer or whatever her name is. She's still in there, ready to take over the world from the comfort of her kitchen.
I thought I'd fixed it, said the man, frowning.
He checked his tablet.
I did. I definitely did. At this point, she is meant to be suggesting a snowball fight.
He took out his tablet and made a few more adjustments to the screen.
Have another go, he said.
Okay, said Bernice. They both looked at each other, waiting for the other to do something.
You can go back into the game where you left off, Mr. Minchin said eventually. Just say the word.
Which word?
The opposite of pause.
He was already halfway up the spiral staircase. What the hell was the opposite of pause, Bernice wondered. Play, she commanded. Go. Start. Nothing happened. The man's voice drifted down the staircase towards her. Even though she couldn't see him, Bernice could tell that he was rolling his eyes.
Unpause, he said.
Roast potatoes, mashed potatoes, parsnips and peas, turkey and gravy and tiny sausages wrapped in bacon. Eagerly, Bernice started to load her plate up with food from a variety of bowls and dishes.
Leave some for me, laughed Grandpa.
The doorbell rang.
It's Santa looking for his frozen baby,
squeaked Toby, scrabbling down from his chair and dashing to answer it. Bending over the bowl of Brussels sprouts, Bernice had her back to the door. She heard the sound of Toby's little feet skidding across the floor. She heard the door opening. She heard a strange noise, almost like a roar, and a terrified scream. Bernice jumped to her feet, lightning fast, but she wasn't as fast as Zoe. The girl leapt from her chair and sprinted out into the front garden. Bernice was only a few seconds behind her. She stood at the front door, staring into the empty street. There was no sign of Toby anywhere.
Follow me,
hissed Zoe, grabbing her by the arm.
Whoa, hold up, said Bernice, stumbling out of the house as she fumbled in her pocket for the notepad and pen.
No time, soldier, said Zoe urgently.
Bernice made a note.
Soldier? Take cover,
and she pulled Bernice into a nearby hedge.
Watch it,
said Bernice, brushing the twigs out of her hair. Zoe pointed silently upwards. Enormous white shapes were materialising in the sky above them. Massive, pointy creatures the size of cars, flapping around in the wintry air like tentacled starfish.
Star scum,
said Zoe grimly. Not very festive, said Bernice, feverishly writing notes on her pad. The girl ignored her.
The Queen took Toby, she said. We must rescue him.
There was a sickening screech from overhead, and the starfish started to move away, shooting through the air in a thick flock.
They're heading for the town hall,
said Zoe. Take this!
Whoa! Said Bernice, staggering back under the weight of the large bazooka that had been thrust into her arms. Where did this come from exactly?
Call it an early Christmas present, said Zoe.
Thanks, said Bernice.
It's filled with a gas that is deadly to the star scum. Just point it at the centre of their bodies and pull the trigger.
Fine, said Bernice in a resigned voice. Slowly, she put the notepad back in her pocket. If Mr. Minchin wanted her to play this simulation through to the end, fine. If she had to spend Christmas Day chasing after a monster instead of eating bread sauce, that's what she'd do. Just once, though. Just once, it would be nice to have a quiet, normal Christmas, even if it was inside a simulation.
What are you waiting for? Zoe yelled. Do it!
Oh, you mean now? Said Bernice. She hefted the bazooka and took aim at the one remaining starfish overhead. It had not left with the rest of the pack and was just hanging about above her, almost as if it was waiting to be used as target practice. Which it was, of course. She pulled the trigger. Blam! And the creature exploded in a shower of sparks. White blobs of starfish floated down towards her like snowflakes, which was a nice touch.
Good aim, soldier, said Zoe. Now let's go.
This really sucks, Bernice thought as she followed Zoe down the icy road. I'm not even in charge. Zoe, or Zarkwell, or whatever her name is downright bossy, and I object to being called soldier.
Shouldn't we tell your mum where we're going?
She asked, sarcastically.
She knows, said Zoe, gesturing behind her.
To Bernice's surprise, Chrissy and Grandpa were standing in the doorway of the house, saluting.
Good luck, called Grandpa. We're counting on you to bring Toby back,
Chrissy added, tearfully. By the time they reached the town hall, things felt different. Everything was less sharp somehow, but also more brightly coloured. Bernice managed to scribble down low-res graphics in her notepad before Zoe urged her through a side door and steered her down the corridors towards the central office.
That's where the Queen has made her lair, the girl assured her.
Are we nearly at the end? Bernice asked.
Toby's being held captive by the Queen, said Zoe. We need to kill the Queen and rescue him.
I know, said Bernice. I mean, after that, is it the end of the game? Zoe gave her a blank look. Usually it is, Bernice said encouragingly, after you kill the big boss.
Let's take it one thing at a time, soldier, Zoe said sternly. Pick up the pace.
Zoe broke into a jog and disappeared around a corner, but Bernice found that she couldn't keep up. The bright, muzzy colours of the town hall were starting to hurt her eyes, and her legs and arms felt heavy.
Can you carry the bazooka for a bit? She called.
There was no reply.
Zoe?
Bernice heaved herself around the corner and saw, not Zoe, but a Christmas turkey. It was wearing dealy boppers with mince pies on the end.
Oh, for goodness sake, she groaned. I'm sorry, but that is the absolute bloody limit. Pause.
Bernice rubbed her eyes. The basement room seemed darker this time. How long had she been away?
Mr. Minchin, she called into the empty room. Your simulation's gone mad. I think it's broken. I'd like to stop now, please.
There was a red light on the side of the pod near her hip. It was flashing in a way that it definitely hadn't been before. Bernice shook her head, trying to concentrate. Was it some kind of warning? She bent down to take a closer look and almost toppled over. Wow, she was really light-headed. She banged at the door of the pod.
Let me out, she called.
Blink, 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 went the red light. Or was it a button? Bernice groped down and pushed at it.
Warning,
the light said in a tinny voice.
Oxygen levels in the pod are low. Please finish your experience and step outside.
I can't, growled Bernice, trying to collect her thoughts.
Had she been having oxygen-starved hallucinations inside the simulation? That would explain the weird turkey. Maybe. She gave the door one last thump, then gave up. Mr. Minchin wasn't coming. There was only one person who could help her now, and that was herself. All she had to do was kill the Queen and rescue Toby, then the door would open. Simple. "Unpause," she said. The turkey was gone, thank goodness, but the world was still blurry around the edges. Weakly, Bernice hoisted her bazooka and moved as quickly as she could to the central office where Zoe was waiting.
"What's the plan?" she asked.
"Shoot to kill," said Zoe. "I'm all out of ammo, so it's up to you to take out the Queen."
"Of course it is," said Bernice unenthusiastically. Zoe aimed a kick at the door and it burst open. An enormous starfish shrieked an unearthly shriek as Bernice levelled her bazooka at it.
"Aim right for the centre," Zoe advised. "And look out for the tentacles, soldier. They can sting."
Bernice grimaced. Tentacles were the least of her problems right now. Big blotches of colour were beginning to appear in front of her eyes. Floating blobs, like jellyfish obscuring the Queen as they drifted lazily in and out of focus.
"Can you see this stuff?" she asked Zoe.
"Aim for the centre," Zoe advised. "And look out for the..."
"Tentacles, yes." Bernice realised that Zoe wasn't going to say anything much else until this part of the simulation was over. She turned back to the doorway to see if she could retreat into the corridor, but her way was blocked by the Christmas turkey.
"Ahoy, Benny," it gobbled, its dealy boppers bouncing up and down as it shook its head from side to side.
To her horror, she saw that a miniature Irving Braxiatel was sitting on his back, wearing a red and white cowboy outfit. His tiny silver spurs sparkled as he kicked his heels into the turkey's sides.
"Ho, ho, ho," he squeaked.
"Now I know I'm hallucinating," Bernice muttered. "Who would have thought that would be the last thing I saw before I died?" Zoe grabbed her arm and spun her back to face the pulsing Queen.
"Aim for the centre," she hissed urgently, "and look out for..."
"I know," said Bernice, and with a mighty effort she hoisted the bazooka and blasted the stupid Queen of the stupid starfish in the centre of its stupid stomach. There was a sickening splat as it exploded across the room. Bernice sighed and put down the bazooka. One good thing about virtual reality, she thought. You can press reset and no one has to clean up all the icky mess.
"Benny! Benny!"
Little Toby crawled out from under a desk and hugged her.
"You saved me!"
"I guess I did," Bernice murmured. She was finding it hard to focus. Toby's face was swimming in front of her eyes. One moment it was Toby. The next it was her son, Peter, his face all red and squishy, like it had been on the day he was born. Someone put a firm hand on her shoulder. Bernie struggled to remember where she was.
"Irving," she said, groggily, looking round. "Are you still there?"
"It's me," said Zoe. "Well done, soldier. You did it. You completed the mission."
I did," whispered Bernice. "Can you... open the pod door now, please."
Zoe looked confused.
"Pod?"
she asked.
"Please," breathed Bernice. "I don't think I'm going to survive a celebratory sherry. I need to cancel, quit, unstart. I don't know the right word, but I want Christmas to stop. Make Christmas stop right now."
The door opened, and Bernice crawled out of the pod, gasping for air.
Snap.
Bernice looked up and saw Mr. Minchin holding a camera, beaming down at her. His hair was perfect.
"So?" he asked. "Pretty good, huh?"
"What?" Bernice said. "And I can't stress this strongly enough. The hell?"
"Hey," said Mr. Minchin, "you did really well."
"I nearly died," said Bernice.
"In the game?"
"In real life," Bernice gestured feebly at the pod. "Due to lack of oxygen?"
Mr. Minchin's eyes flicked from the open pod door to the flashing red light and then up to a small tube at the top of the pod.
"Oh," he said, "will you look at that?"
And he reached up and smartly pulled a piece of fluffy yellow sponge from the tube.
"Oh, piece of packing material in the oxygen tube," he said. "All gone now."
He tossed it into a waste bin. Bernie staggered to her feet. The room was spinning, and she put a hand against the wall to steady herself.
"If you think I'm going to let you use my name to entice people into this death trap," she said, "you've another thing coming. I've never seen anything like this in my life. What were you playing at? You left me alone in a pod that doesn't unlock and went to get a haircut."
"I'm so sorry," Mr. Minchin began, patting his hair a little self-consciously. "But you've already signed the contract, so..." He shrugged.
"Sorry's not good enough," said Bernice. "Even if you hadn't nearly killed me, I couldn't endorse this mess. My reputation as a scholar would be ruined if I said that this was an accurate representation of a 20th century anything."
"You're a scholar?"
Mr. Minchin looked surprised.
"Well, yes," said Bernice, her righteous indignation faltering. "I mean, well, of course I am. Professor Bernice Summerfield. That was why you wanted me to test the experience, wasn't it?"
Mr. Minchin frowned, and Bernice could see that it clearly was not.
"Well, what was it then?" she demanded, trying to hide her confusion. "You wanted someone who'd travelled a lot, was that it? You'd heard of my reputation as an adventurer?"
"I'm sorry," Mr. Minchin suddenly looked as though he was trying to stifle a grin. "I had no idea you were an adventurer."
Bernice's pride took a sudden nosedive.
"We just thought you had the right look," he finished.
Bernice dragged herself up the stairs, through the empty hairdressers, and out onto the street. In the shop, Mr. Minchin's brother was sweeping up hair clippings and whistling softly. Bernice crossed the road and looked back. Above the shop, a large electronic billboard read, "Basement to Let." The words flashed for a moment, then disappeared, and were replaced with a picture of Chrissy, Zoe, Toby and Grandpa smiling in front of a Christmas tree. Above them were the words, "Experience Christmas on 20th Century Earth." For a moment, the picture stayed like this, flickering gently. Then suddenly, an animated star creature burst across the screen, smashing the peaceful image into 1,000 pixels. Behind it trailed a banner that said, "If you dare." There was a blaring rock guitar screech, and the screen changed again. Bernice's jaw dropped. Now there were two enormous pictures labelled with the words "before" and "after." In the first photo, she was standing in front of the pod, smiling at the camera and looking, well, pretty good for someone her age, actually. The same, alas, could not be said for the second. It must have been taken just as she had crawled out of the pod, because she was on her hands and knees, staring at the floor with glassy eyes and an ashen complexion. At the bottom of the screen, just in case anyone didn't recognise her from the pictures, was her name, written boldly in red and green, "Professor Bernice Summerfield." It was followed by a quote which, on reflection, she supposed she had actually said, "I've never seen anything like this in my life."